Hey, welcome back. Patrick here on the Patrick Podcast. Thanks again for downloading and listening. This week, we're talking to my dear friend, Justin Wright, photographer extraordinaire, entrepreneur to the max, a life coach, amazing, amazing individual, such a fascinating life. This is a wonderful interview. I just love talking to him. Like, we've had so much history, so much to share. And I know that, as I've said in several episodes in the past, that some of these folks are brand new to a lot of you. And I find them so, so fascinating and interesting. And I think you will too. So dig into this episode, listen to it, take some good notes, because I really think you're going to leave it really thankful and for what Justin has to say. So a couple announcements before we get into the episode. Number one, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. The Patrick Podcast is the username. Also, if you haven't already, make sure to like this episode on iTunes. Follow us on iTunes or Spotify or any of the Google Podcast platforms that you use. But make sure to share it. Share it on your Instagram, share it on your Facebook, share it on Twitter. That would be so helpful. We want to expand this podcast as much as we can and get to as many ears as possible. Another announcement is we're going to be taking a break soon. And in the break, we're going to take a pause, reflect, dream, plan, and get ready for the next season of the Patrick Podcast. So that being said, we'll have a few more episodes and you'll still see me around. I'm not going to be going anywhere, but we're going to take a pause from all of the heavy recording of pop culture episodes and Nashville episodes and everything else in between to really do something different for you. We're about to get to Justin, but before we do that, Ben, what's up?
So
what you got?
We've had our Nashville episode already at this point.
Oh, nice.
And in that episode, do you remember talking about the spicy ketchup that McDonald's had?
Yeah, spicy ketchup.
So I've got a fact about ketchup.
Oh, nice. I love ketchup.
Quick fact about me, just for the listeners to get to know me a little more. I have a phobia of ketchup. It's a real phobia. You can Google it. I have met other people that have this phobia. So,
like, if you see it or if you smell it?
I've gotten a lot better with it. I will say that. Because I've been around lots of ketchup lovers, but the smell bothers me a lot. It's mainly the smell, but it basically, if it gets within a certain radius, and it's a tight radius at this point in time, but if it gets within a certain radius of me, I will be uncomfortable and I will probably move, if not move you with the ketchup. If you have the ketchup in your hand, you're coming too close to me.
Is it making you anxious even thinking about ketchup being near you right now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. And I would tell my friends, you know, if, like, if you intentionally prank me with ketchup, we won't be friends anymore. And that is a threat.
Heart line.
Yeah. And I don't want to be like that, but, like, you just don't have to prank me with ketchup. So anyways, that being said, I've got a fact about ketchup that this is going to feel real good getting out there.
Is this propaganda?
So the first time ketchup is mentioned in history, it was a European condiment back in the 16th century.
Mm.
And it was not made with tomatoes.
What was it made with?
Shark innards.
Ah.
For all you ketchup lovers out there, I hope you enjoy shark innards.
What? That's not what it's made with
Eat
now.
Shark innards. It's Eat my shorts.
No, it's not. It's tomatoes. Anyway, this is derailed. Let's get to the episode. Enjoy this conversation interview I have with Justin Wright. Peace. Justin, what's up?
Not much.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on. This is exciting.
This is very exciting. So here we are with my good pal, Justin Wright. I'm excited to have you on the show.
Thanks.
We, as I was thinking about, you know, this whole kind of, I guess we're calling it season one of the show, I really have been chatting with mostly people that I'm good friends with, that I've worked with in different capacities. But truly, I think this may be true. You and I have shared a variety of life experiences together.
Yes.
Like, a lot. And we were in a club together. Not only that, we started a variety show together. We led a mission trip together.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
We prior to even that, we did an epic spring break trip together.
Yes, which will not be, I will not talk about that trip on this podcast.
It's probably the best for both of us. We've led retreats. I did something in that wedding.
Yeah.
In the wedding. I mean, we've partnered in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. 18 years. I was doing the math in my head.
Which is.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
Which makes me feel incredibly old too.
Yeah. They're freshmen starting school who are 18.
Right.
And it's like, that's how long we've been friends. So all that say, we have much that we could talk about in this episode. We won't get into all those rabbit holes, but we might get into some. So I'm excited for you all, the audience here, to be listening to this conversation and getting to know Justin, because I truly believe that Justin, like anyone else who's been on this show, has such perspective and wisdom and experiences that hearing the way his life has unfolded could potentially be inspiring for some others, and will maybe leave some with a sense of hope and like, okay, I can like do this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not just in this one lane, and I can break free and do some other things. So I think that we'll get into some of that, and who knows what else. But what I wanted to start off with you, Justin, is let's take me back. And instead of like just in a traditional way of talking about your childhood and upbringing,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to frame it as like, what if you could draw upon three stories or experiences or kind of like moments that kind of, I would say, define your childhood experience. Like, here are kind of three movements, or here are three kind of like little nuggets of like, here's my childhood, adolescence in three snapshots. Maybe that's the, maybe that's the word. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to think which stories would be most beneficial or have impacted me. It's honestly like not a question I've thought about. The first thing that comes to my mind, so just a little background. I grew up mainly in St. Louis as a kid. Lots of freedom to run around. Spent most of my days building forts, playing pretend guns. One thing we did, which was extremely dangerous, we lived in a newer neighborhood, and Ninja Turtles were extremely popular at the time. And so we would roll through the sewers, basically, on skateboards.
That's amazing.
And, which I don't think my parents knew what I was doing with all that freedom, but it's kind of that situation where as long as you're home by sunset,
yes,
then we're good. When I was 15, I moved to South Africa. And so with my dad's job, he worked for AT&T. He came home. Actually, we were sitting in my brother's baseball game one day, and they said, hey, we're going to move. It's probably either going to be to Texas or South Africa. And I said, I don't want to go to Texas.
I don't want to go to Texas.
I do not want to go to Texas.
Nothing wrong with Texas, Texas listener. I just don't want to live there.
Right. And I will say, I think that whole move, you know, being in the same place for 15 years, having a very defined worldview, and then kind of being ripped out of that and going to, you know, across the world, just seeing that the world is much bigger than I had known. And there's a lot of stories within that.
Sure.
And so, you know, one thing, the first year I was there was kind of like a vacation. Everything was new. And then I have an older brother. We moved there right before his senior year of high school.
Wow.
And so, which was great for him at the time. He was a huge band nerd, bad acne stuff. He got to rebrand himself over there. So wow. He loved it. He was like ready to go.
Yeah.
I, however, was not, you know, I was getting ready to be able to drive finally. I had a great set of friends, and you can't drive over there till you're 18. So I went from, really loving my life. And then that first year was awesome, like a vacation. But then the end of that year, my brother left. And so I went to American International School. And so, you know, a lot of the other kids there are either, you know, their parents are high up in the corporate world or they're embassy kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they might live in South Africa for a year and then France for a year and then Egypt. And so I went from having this same core group of friends for 15 years.
In St. Louis.
Right.
Yeah.
To a new situation where you make new friends and then they move across the world and you never see them again.
Wow.
So I think that shaped me a lot. Just over the course, so I was there for 4 years. I graduated high school there, and then my parents were there for 7 total. But, you know, that was a new experience for me. I think there's a lot of benefits to it as far as being able to make new friends very easily.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it also had an effect on me as having a hard time seeing friendships as permanent things in my life. And so, cause at any time it seemed like they could kind of, you know, get ripped out of you.
Yeah. Wow. So, okay. Before, I don't want to lose this. Who's your favorite Ninja Turtle?
Probably Raphael.
Yes.
Michelangelo too. He liked to party. So,
yes. Yeah. Yes. I rarely meet people who say Leonardo. Cause he was such a, he was always,
he's like the leader, but not, yeah. But, and then Donatello was kind of cool because he's like got the nerdy vibe going
right, on. Right, yeah. Right. So doing the high school experience in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
did you become, I know sometimes when you get removed from like your hometown that you were living in and now you're in another country or another state or city, you become even more proud of the place you were once from. Hmm. Was that true for you? When you were in South Africa, were you like, oh, St. Louis, it's the best? Like, or did you kind of embrace this, like, I'm just from America and I love being here in another? Like, what was your, can you remember?
Yeah, I would never like Nelly, St. Louis proud.
Right, you were never like that diehard, like St. Louis.
I don't know if this is going to answer your question, but it's kind of, the strangest part was graduating, going back to the States, which there's a lot of stories within that, like readjusting, but also then going back to back home to South Africa. My parents had sold the house I grew up in, and then it's like, I didn't have a room, and it's kind of like, where is my home? Who am I? Like
this sort
of thing. But I feel like I had more pride from my experience being an international kid than I did an American.
Yeah.
So if I'm
hearing the snapshots right, it's like this, maybe snapshot one is this freedom to roam and explore as a young kid.
Yeah.
And then you move from that to this international kid,
right,
living in South Africa and having friends who were from the world. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't have all friends who grew up in St. Louis, but you had those friends too, you know? So,
yeah. And I think that theme of freedom, so something interesting is, so basically during the summertime, I'd actually come back to St. Louis and stay with my, who are now some of my, I call them family, but they were just friends at the time.
Right.
And I basically had a bank card and a car, and my parents were back in Africa.
Wow.
And so it's kind of always within the theme of like a lot of trust and a lot of freedom. It kind of ingrains like essentially anything is possible. There's no like, you're going to be doing this for this amount of time. It's just kind of like, what are you going to do with the freedom you've been given?
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's it. I want to come back to that. Is there any other snapshot from childhood that just like automatically comes to mind? Or those the main two, or is there anything else like from
that really shaped me?
Yeah, really shaped you. Yeah.
I feel like more shaping came really kind of towards in college, but then also more after college, honestly. Okay. So no childhood story. I mean, my childhood is always very good and pretty normal. Right. Played sports. You know, my parents have been married for 45 years yesterday.
Wow. 45.
Great family. And so there's not like...
I just didn't know there's any other moment that just stood out as like, yeah, that really was a fond memory moment or that experience. But
yes, I mean, one thing that just come to mind when this is after college and my grandfather got real sick. It's kind of a long story, but I remember in the hospital, like I'd been in Guatemala. I came home because my mom basically said like, you know, he's going to pass away soon. Yeah. So if you really want to see him, come on up. And I remember like everything kind of being chaotic. And then my dad finally got there. I just remember having this like sense of peace, like everything's going to be good now.
Yeah.
And so that kind of ingrained to me as a father, like thinking about my boys, like I want to, you know, be that same kind of presence in their lives.
Wow. So yeah, you're married. You have two kids.
Yeah, 4 and 7, two boys.
Yep. Wow. And so I guess the first kind of I thought about this in your describing your childhood a little bit is, are you, because you've experienced that freedom as a kid, right?
Right.
Do you feel yourself trying to give your two sons like that same level of freedom, or are you like, I remember what having all that freedom was like.
Yeah.
I don't know about, like, where do you land on that? Right. Like, are you one of those kind of people, or have you been seeing yourself as a father kind of like duplicating what your family did, or do you kind of do on a remix, I guess?
I think I'm better about giving them freedom as far as what they choose to do with their time.
Sure.
As far as, like, I wouldn't let my kids roam around our neighborhood by themselves, especially they're 7 and 4.
Right.
But when they're
13, 14, maybe, but maybe not still. Yeah.
Right. I mean, one thing that my childhood taught me is like anything is possible. Like based on my parents gave me the option. They never said, we want you to be this. Like we expect you to be a doctor and like make this kind of money or do this. They just said like, hey, we trust you. And my brother and I are both very creative. And they gave us the freedom to kind of explore and encourage us. They are always there if we needed them, but they were never like overbearing, like telling us what to do. With our boys, you know, we like our oldest son, he doesn't really, for instance, we signed up for baseball. They won like the Creve Hall Championship. And we're like, hey, you want to play like baseball again? He's like, no, like I figured it out. I'm good. And we're like, well, that's not exactly how it works. Yeah. But he's kind of like, well, that's fun. And then I asked him if he wanted to play basketball because he asked for a basketball for his birthday. And he's like, no, I just like want to play with you. And so it's like, but he's really great at art. Like he's an awesome drawer. Like he'll watch YouTube videos and like knock it out of the park and very creative, loves Legos. And so he's more of like, he's happy being inside doing that sort
of
thing.
He's an artist. Yeah.
Yeah. And so just encouraging that way, you know, our other son, he likes a little more sports, but he also just kind of does whatever his big brother's doing. I don't want to pigeonhole them and be like, you know, have that awesome dad experience. Like, I love baseball and I want my kids to love baseball. And so I kind of like the way I see it is like putting all these things out on the table. And then if they choose to do something, encourage them as much, but not make it like, you have to practice piano 2 hours every day, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Because I mean, I guess like that's the unique thing about you is that you did have this journey and this stint of being involved in team sports, right? Which everyone who's been involved in team sports can say there is some wonderful value to being on a team of guys or girls, if it's a daughter or female. It's like you see the value of the team experience because you learn something, right? You learn something that you couldn't learn otherwise just being the solo kid. And so he's like, well, I want you to have that, but then you're also unique because, like, what we see a lot is the people who are both these sport team type oriented people, which is a very kind of a social experience, and then also this artist type, which you've kind of alluded to, which is in some ways artistry is kind of introverted in by nature, because you've got to sit in the lab or sit in the studio and just like, okay, I'm going to put pen to paper or strum this guitar or paint this painting until I get it right. So how, I guess growing up for you, I'll turn it to a question, is what was the moment for you where you said, okay, I'm leaving this stream and kind of like whether it's sports and this kind of like more life that's in really more involved with lots of different kind of people to this, like, I'm going to have this kind of stint journey in creative music and doing this artistic thing. Like, what was, do you remember a moment for you where it's like, I'm choosing this path?
Definitely. And I don't even know if I've, So one memory that comes to mind is, so I played basketball and volleyball all through high school, and it was senior year, you know, parents there, they gave out like the trophies and stuff like that. And we had done this big international, like other international schools from Zimbabwe, Kenya, all came to our school and like competed. And so it was like a senior event, but also they're giving awards. And there's like a party afterwards. And I'd met this guy from one of the other schools who played guitar. And so we were going to do music at the party afterwards.
Of course.
And so I'm like, I don't really care about these trophies. I'm just going to go set up my drums and start warming up and stuff like that. And then, so before the party starts, my parents come and find me, and my dad was like, you kind of skipped the trophy part. Your mom's a little upset. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh. But, you know, I kind of realized that was just like, I didn't really care about the sports as much anymore at that point. I still enjoy sports, but that competitive nature, I'd rather put that energy towards being able to do what I want to do, have control over, and then be able to share that with people and kind of help them understand all this crazy stuff that goes in my brain and like a way to express it, whether it be through music or photography or, you know, anything.
So, okay, this is going to kind of lead us to maybe to current. This will lead us definitely to current. This question will. Is, okay, 16, 17-year-old Justin.
Yes.
You can picture him, right?
Yeah. Lot skinnier. Bad haircut.
Well, you know, it was a fine haircut.
I needed to be washed a lot more than I washed. Yeah.
So 16, 17-year-old Justin.
Yeah.
Looking now at Justin of the now.
Yeah.
Right? What does 16, 17-year-old Justin, what does he think? What does he say about the life that you've built, the work that you're doing? Like, what's his response, you think? Like, of, okay, here, you're doing what now? Is it?
Yeah.
You're in Tennessee?
I think, yeah. You stayed in Nashville.
Yeah, what is that? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I was 16 or 17, I think my dream job was going to be selling handmade bracelets and anklets on the coast of Spain. I had no idea.
That's amazing.
Definitely couldn't support myself, or definitely not a family. I mean, unless they're really high-end bracelets, I guess, but nothing I could make.
Right.
Yeah, I think he'd be surprised that, you know, one thing I never was told or like thought about was like, you can have a job as a creative. Like, you don't have to be like a banker or a nurse or, you know, a teacher. Like, you can take this creative gift you've been given and actually make a job out of it.
Right.
And that light bulb really didn't go off for me until, geez, I was 24, 25, I think. And so I think he'd be happy. But if we could flip it and say, what would you say to your 16 or 17-year-old self? Yeah. I'd say like, hey, like, embrace the parts of yourself that you love and make you come alive, and understand like, if you work hard, you can actually build a job around that and get to do what you love for a living.
Wow. So 24-year-old Justin.
Yeah.
What was the light bulb? What were you doing?
So story goes, so you know, let's see. All right.
See how I got us there?
Yeah. All right. So went to Guatemala. I'm going to back a little bit. Went to Guatemala, studied Spanish, came back, like I mentioned, because my grandfather got real sick. So I was back early. I was going to be there 3 months. I was only there a month. And I got back to Nashville. I was like, in my head, I'm still supposed to be in Guatemala.
Right.
What am I going to do? Got a job at a coffee shop. First at Borders, if anybody remembers Borders. Totally dating myself.
Wow.
On West End. Then I worked at Fido, which is phenomenal. Great lamb burger, I think they still have.
They do.
But so between college, my senior year of college, I've been doing a youth ministry internship. And so got back, worked at coffee shops, and then turns out that the youth minister that they hired to replace me as an intern resigned. And so they asked me to fill in for the summer. Ended up being there like 3 or 4 years, I think. But so I went from making $7 an hour and eating like SpaghettiOs every day to making like 24 grand a year. And like, at the time, I was like, I have all this money. Yeah.
I took over the world. I'm so rich.
Exactly. And so I was kind of like, you know, I always dabble in sports and music. I was like, I just want to choose one thing and really try to excel at it.
Right.
And so for me, that was photography. I'd taken a black and white film class in college, but that was pretty much it.
Right.
And so went out with all my new cash, bought like a decent camera, and just like every extra time or money I had, I would put back into photography. And that kind of started. So that led to the light bulb moment was, you know, people started to notice that I had was taking photos. Like I was just the guy with the camera.
Right.
And I had a friend, Britt Chambers, her parents own the Musicians Hall of Fame. And so they had just kind of opened. I was like, hey, can I come by and take some photos? And they're like, yeah, sure, of course. And so they ended up using, they're just kind of like still shots of the museum. So they use those for those brochures and advertisements. And they're like, hey, we have Peter Frampton coming in to donate a guitar. Can you do like press photography? I was like, what is press photography? Like on Google.
I was like, sure, I got this.
And so I'd come in, photograph the event, and when it's all said and done, they give me a check, and I was like, what? You can get paid for taking photos? Which sounds ridiculous now.
Right, exactly.
But it's just like, I never thought, like, there's these photos, and someone got paid to take them, and now this company's using it. It's just like, and so that really kind of drove in that, you know,
wow.
I can be a creative, I can make money from it, and this isn't just like a hobby, it's actually, you know, I could do this for a living. And so just continued as I was doing youth ministry, kind of came a point where I was turning down a lot of weddings and other work because of my commitments with my other job. And then so just decided, feel like God kind of led me out. And so got married in January, started the business in March, and that was over 10 years ago.
So was it the confidence of marrying your wife that gave you the push you needed to kind of say, all right, let's roll the dice, let's do this thing?
So,
or was it something else? Yeah,
it was more just like, I don't want to support a wife on 24 grand a year.
Right.
So what I decided to do is like, all right, if I can replace my wedding income, my ministry income with shooting weddings, then I'll like, it makes sense to leave. I wasn't going to be like the married guy that just quit his job with no plan.
Yeah.
So the cool thing about shooting weddings is, you know, you book out like 6 months to a year in advance. And so I could kind of actually see like
where the money's gonna come in. Right.
And so that worked out. And so that's how I did it. There wasn't like, I mean, she does give me more confidence and she's an encourager and takes good care of me and believes in me. But I think it was a combination of just,
but the rumble was in you to like, I've got to figure out if I can just do this thing.
Exactly.
And was that, so I guess for you, how was ending this experience in youth ministry, which is, you know, any kind of ministry, any kind of church work is very intimate work because you're personally connected and involved in people's lives.
Yeah.
And you say, like, when you leave, it's never easy to leave, no matter how the leaving happens. It's never easy. So how was it for you personally to kind of like exit this thing, which is so personal, intimate, and like they kind of made room for you to kind of do this, have a job kind of full time, you know, for the first time, to like say, I gotta trust what the Spirit is kind of rumbling in me to do next.
Right.
Like, how was that for you? Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't grow up in a youth group. and I didn't really become a Christian, I'd say, till I was like 18, 19. And so that's kind of part of the story. Just like, I never planned on being a youth minister.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, God totally led me into that job. And so it's kind of like, this wasn't my life plan. And so it was just kind of like, where is the Spirit leading me now? And I feel like just with the things going on, and like, I kind of felt like I was led there to be with some specific kids. And it kind of shifted from these juniors and seniors, which I really connect with, to like a mass exodus of those kids graduating. And then it's just like middle school kids.
Yeah.
God bless middle school ministers, man. I felt like I was doing more babysitting than ministry, just because of my personality and my gifts. And so leaving was, I mean, it wasn't easy. I don't like to disappoint people. And there were some kids I was still extremely close to, but I just felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah. So, you have, now you kind of entered into this part of your, of you, which is you have this big photography business now. You shoot all these weddings, you do events, you've most recently were shooting the now Tennessee governor. You were doing his, you were on a campaign trail with him and shot at the Capitol for a little while. But before I get into any of that kind of stuff, really, I'm really interested in you now, over the years, have started and ended and started again several companies, in like these little companies, some directly dealing with photography, some in the past that has been different businesses altogether.
Yeah.
And so I guess the question I have is, what are the lessons you've learned from starting and ending and even restarting these different businesses and companies that you've been a part of?
Yeah. Wow. It's hard to run two businesses at once, meaning like having a hustle. So I'll talk about Camera Camp. So Camera Camp was a photography, online photography tutorial training site. So, you know, you could pay a subscription and we'd show you everything that you need to know to learn about your camera. I launched it right when we had our first son. I had 40 weddings booked that year. I brought on a full-time assistant. And I kind of showed, like, it was doing well, but there came a point where it's like, I can either be with my newborn son or I can, like, put my energy and time into this business. And so I just shut it down. And that was, like, 6 years ago. But I just kind of been sitting on these videos and the content. And so actually I'm going to relaunch it soon. But, you know, for me, I'm not scared to fail with these things because it's, I wouldn't even call them companies. I just call them hustles or side hustles. That the favorite one that I did, which was called Photo Busters. I'll have to get you a photo of me. So basically it's called Photo Busters. The idea was it's a mobile photo booth. And so I call it Photo Busters because I built this, like, I got like a Cub Scout A-frame backpack, right?
Yeah.
So on one side I have an arm holding a laptop.
Yeah.
And the other side has like a flash. And so the idea is, like, instead of it being a standalone photo booth, you could go to events and engage with the people there.
Yeah.
So things would be branded. So basically, like, I take a photo, and then they could use it on their Facebook. It has like Coca-Cola image or like logo on it, stuff like that. The one thing I learned from that is that most people don't know their Facebook passwords.
Yeah.
And so, and this technology was, it was a while ago. I'm sure there's stuff that you could do it, but, and now, and this was before selfies were huge and people were doing more of that stuff. But, I'd say if you learn anything, it's just, it takes a lot of work, especially it's really fun in the beginning stages. I've seen this. So like you mentioned, I do other things. I got certified to do like life and business coaching. And so I did that for a hot minute. And, what I learned is people get very excited in the beginning stages because it's like you're telling people what you're doing. It's exciting. You're like seeing your dreams come to fruition.
Yeah.
And then like people stop talking about it and like you have to do like the grudge work of actually building a business and like doing like reporting and all the boring stuff that it takes to make a business actually successful. It's easy to start things. It's harder to actually build them into something.
Wow. And so I guess that may be what you've said is it's so true. And for the creative that's listening to this, there is that piece of the creative process that is the mundane, the boring, the spreadsheet. It's almost like we never can escape the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Eventually you get the spreadsheet will get to you. The Word document's going to get to you eventually, right?
Yeah.
So like how do you, as someone who leans so heavily in the idea and the creative, like what was the lesson or how did you kind of get over that hurdle of I've got to like do the boring stuff too?
Right. Yeah, I mean I think you start it because of the creative process. And I see this a lot with photographers that I mentor. Some people should just keep photography as a hobby,
right,
and let it feed into their soul. But the other flip side of that is, I think when you do start something, you typically have to do all those little jobs that come together because, unless you have some startup money or something like that. But if you don't, then you hustle until you build your business and then you have the money to outsource the things that you don't want to do.
Right.
So I don't do taxes. I'd be awful at taxes, Yeah, and absolutely. So, and it would just be like, it's not worth the headache and stress for me to do it because there's people out there you can pay that will kill it, whereas I would probably mess something up anyways. And yeah. So there's that balance of like building it to where you get to do the parts of it that you want to do. And I think you have to acknowledge which parts those are and what you're naturally gifted at and which parts you need to outsource, which will actually end up helping your business a lot more because they're being done better than you would do it.
Right. That's good.
And freeing you up to do the things of the business that you're good at. So like for me, like I'm good with like clients, obviously taking photos. That's kind of where like my jam is, interacting with people. But like all like the bookkeeping stuff like that is not for me. I did not get that gift.
So what is the thing that people are, you're expert photographer now and you talk to many people that, who are on that edge of like, do I do this professionally, I'm really good at filters and like what's your,
I'm really good at filters.
Like what's the thing that people get wrong about photography and what's something that, that was like a lesson you learned in just the art of taking photos?
Yeah, so I think one thing that happens is, you're not just doing a photography business. So essentially the thought process, I believe, should be more like, I'm choosing to start a business and that business is a photography business.
Right.
It's not like, I'm going to get paid to take photos.
Right.
And so if you don't want to start a business, then you need to, like I mentioned, like either like outsource the stuff you don't, or like you should just keep it as a hobby that feeds your soul. What was the second part of that?
I guess the first part was what do people get wrong about photography. Uh-huh. The second part was what's something that you've learned in the process of becoming this photographer. Like what's something that you've even in the art itself, like doing the actual thing. Like
yeah, well, I think anybody can learn how to work a camera. Like right. I mean, I have the course that can teach you like in 2 days you could know what to do. Most people can understand basic lighting. I think the thing that separates photographers, especially with what I do, is the way you interact with people. And do they want you around their clients, their inside their business? Do they want to spend time with you? And I think that's a big part of it is like, because I think you can see what I'm drawn to if you look at my photos. Like I love people, I love emotion, I love telling stories. It's funny. So I was the former chief state photographer for Tennessee.
Yeah.
And I get robocalls all the time. Do you get robocalls?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. And so I got a call and it was like Nebraska or something. I was like, I was in a really good mood. So I was like, I'm just going to pick it up, see what happens, talk
you're
to the robot.
You're a good man.
But I was like, hello. And they're like, hi, is this Justin? I was like, oh, they're going to try to sell me something. I was like, yes, this is Justin. Of Justin Wright Photography? I was like, yes.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, hi, yes, we have a potential candidate running for office in Tennessee. I was wondering if you might be interested in talking about doing some photos. I was like, oh, hey, how's it going? Thanks for calling. And that's what led me to working with Bill Lee on his campaign. it was just, and I was like, so what was interesting though is, so I have a commercial website. It's kind of hard to find, but it's there. It's like the headshots and more of the commercial work I do.
Right.
My other website is really easy to find. And so I said, you know, how'd you find my commercial website? They're like, oh no, like we love your wedding stuff. So they hired me based on my wedding photography.
Wow.
Because of what they're looking to convey. Like Bill's like, he's the real deal, very genuine. Like, you know, some politicians will like act like a farmer.
Sure.
Because it's like good
PR. Oh, it's good PR, right.
No, he's like the real deal. And like, he is like who, like we've, you know, the team and his team, which is awesome, has, you know, shown you who he is. Like,
sure.
he's very genuine. And so they wanted something. They didn't want like stiff political photos. They wanted storytelling, capture emotion, really kind of tell his story well and represent who he is. And so I think they are able to bridge that connection just based on me doing what I love and what they needed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my style doesn't work with everything, but, you know, with people and like lifestyle, it does.
Have you ever, so I guess to not run too quickly through even that experience, what was the most surprising thing you learned about, whether it's photography or even people in general, working as the chief photographer? Like, what was, I mean, because you didn't do it for, you didn't do it for that long.
Like 3 months.
3 months.
Yeah.
But I mean, even in 3 months, you can learn a lot in 3 months.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So like, what was the thing that like, that you took away that surprised you, that was interesting to you about just,
yeah.
Because as a photographer too, you see everything,
right.
Even things that people don't think you see.
Right.
Yeah, I'm interested in that.
Yeah.
You don't have to get like, oh, I saw, you know, I'm not looking for like an expose, but
I probably have a non-disclosure somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
I mean, the thing that surprised me, so I'm not like political. I don't really get starstruck. And like, people treat the governor like a rock star, which I mean, he's like really cool rock star, but it's just like, I never had, it's just weird. Like, he'd show up, you know, we have these amazing state troopers that are like at like his security.
Yeah.
Super awesome guys and women. But, so it's like, it's just kind of weird that, you know, going around in a suburban or a private plane and then like that can become kind of normal for you, for me.
Right.
But what I've seen is like, people are people, like,
yeah.
You know, no matter where you kind of end up, those people are still just a person, whether it be like a famous musician or an actor. Like, you know, I've known a good hand of famous people, but especially after taking that job, and it's just, people are people, and you know, we have these experiences and sometimes they lead to these really cool things where we're in the public eye and sometimes they don't. But I think that also ties into my ability to like kind of do lifestyle and weddings well. It's just like, mm-hmm. acknowledging that every person's a person, no matter how small. Dr. Seuss, right?
that's right. Well, I mean, I think that's a good pickup, is people are people. And I mean, truly, you can choose if someone will feel like a stranger to you.
Mm, yeah.
Or you can choose, and I think that's something that you do well as a photographer and as a person. It's like, I'm going to step into this room and be my comfortable self, which will make you be your comfortable self.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I think a lot of times we walk into a room with perceptions about people, or like,
yeah,
they're not smiling at me, so that means they don't like me or they're angry.
Right.
But it's really just like, they might not just be a smiley person.
Yeah, so they're like, a smiley person. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you can engage from the place where you are and be like, they don't have to be smiling at me. Like, I can still change their day or like get in there and, you know, kind of affect how they're feeling.
Huh. Okay. So I want to talk about music for a little bit. I want to switch gears.
All right.
So you did music for a while before you got into this photography thing.
I have been paid.
You have been paid
to play and sing.
To play and sing.
I have. Yes.
So free.
That's funny to think that.
It is, right?
Yeah.
So for you, when you were writing songs.
Mm-hmm. And I'm still writing.
And you, oh.
Just for myself. But
just for yourself.
Yeah.
What's that? Talk about that process for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think every songwriter, every musician has a different kind of experience and process with the art that is music. What is it? What has that been like for you?
For me, it's never, I would never like had a dream to be about being a rock star or anything like that.
Sure.
I mean, I started writing poetry when really bad poetry. I was like in fifth grade. Everything rhymed, most of it about love and getting dumped in sixth grade. But that's a funny story. Can I tell that real quick?
Yeah. Oh, please do.
Off topic. Okay.
No,
so,
no, this is good.
This is like end of sixth grade, epic, you know, last day. I kind of had been dating this girl. We were boyfriend, girlfriend. So last day, we go, like the whole sixth grade goes to the roller skating park. I hope this story is funny as I think it is, but.
This is already great.
So we're skating around and Meredith was like, hey, we need to talk. It's like, I'm dumping you. And I was like, okay. And I started just skating in circles and I'm like still holding it together, but barely. And then all of a sudden there's this kid that was like his first skating experience. The teacher was trying to help him. He falls down right in front of me. I, like a superhero, jump, fly through the air. So these like 10-pound skates don't crush his little body. But then I like wipe out and I just lost it. And I remember the teacher being like, are you okay, Justin? I was like, I'm fine. Tears pouring down my face. All that to say, songwriting, yeah. So I used to write a lot of poetry. And then, like I mentioned, I have an older brother who is a full-time songwriter, does very well for himself and super talented. But I remember,
hopefully he'll come on the show.
There we go. That'd be
twist
great.
His arm.
tell some corny jokes. So he had a guitar. And so I was always a drummer by trade. Like I took drum lessons for 2 or 3 years starting in sixth grade. And then, you know, but with drums, it's not like you can't really put words to drumming. You can, but it'd be like, no one wants to hear that. Or so I started learning guitar, you know, the classic four chords. And I remember having this electric guitar and I would plug it into my like boombox double cassette player and like record songs. And so, you know, that really took off. When I moved to South Africa, kind of during some of those darker times is when I really start. And so if you listen to my music, for a while there is kind of like a lot of spiritual stuff, but I remember I had a friend come to a show and she's just like, you're very lighthearted, but your music is so heavy. I was like,
you're like
if you listen to my music, you'd probably be like, oh man, we got to like give this guy some help or some Xanax or something. But
so what do you think that is? Like, why do you think that it happened that way?
Yeah. I heard my brother talk about this too. Like when I'm happy, I want to be outside or doing like something with my family or playing with my kids. Like,
right.
I don't want to be writing music. I don't know. Not that it's like, it's more of like, I have this thing inside of me. I need to get it out. And it comes out, it's just like heavier stuff. And that's how I kind of express it, get it out. And even like, it helps me think through what I'm thinking about because stuff comes out that kind of surprises you sometimes.
So have you ever thought about like, what does it look like to connect the music and the photography together? I mean, like, has that ever crossed your mind?
Take pictures of myself playing guitar and singing?
I don't know. I don't know if there's any connection at all to the two.
Yeah, I mean, I do like, you know, I love music not as much as you, but, you know, I don't know. There's some photographers I know that like they want to, especially being in Nashville, like that's what they want to do, like working with musicians. And
right.
It's never really appealed to me.
I mean, you've shot a couple like live
Bird
music.
Talker too, yeah, did Bird some photos for them, but you know they're friends before they're artists, which was, we had a lot of fun, but still it's kind of like some of my favorite stuff came like from just kind of hanging out at a restaurant, a bar, and then just like them sitting. It's more that lifestyle type of feel. But we did do some cool photos of the old Sound Stadium.
That's right,
which
I
is
remember
epic
that.
Because I think it's gone now.
I think
right,
it's gone. The
guitar is gone.
Yeah,
it looked like a zombie apocalypse with all the graffiti and stuff. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah. So, you got, like you said, photography. We talked a little bit about music. We haven't talked anything about, you know, you mentioned a little while ago about you getting certified to be a life coach.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe as we start to kind of like, land this plane of who you are, what you've been involved in, and that kind of thing, kind of share with us kind of the lessons or the the nuggets of truth that you've come to know because of being a photographer, because of playing live music and writing music, and even more recently, getting certified as a life coach. Like, you could have done a lot of different things, but life coach is what you landed on. So
yeah.
And maybe you start with the life coach and work your way backwards. But like, talk to me about like even why, maybe she even briefly before we get into that, like why even life coach and not anything else, like a spiritual director or a, I don't know, like a professional business mentor. I'm sure there's a course in that, you know, like I'm sure there's other variety of options, but why that versus.
Gotcha. So, I'd always thought about doing counseling. I mean, I always look at grad schools. They had all of these like piles of just like admissions, you know, magazines, stuff like that. But because I love people. And so I love helping people, talking about real stuff. Like if we're going to get coffee, I don't want to talk about, you know, just small talk all day. I'd rather just get the heavy stuff, which is not just heavy, but like good, important, real stuff. Like what's going on in your life. And but one day, Lacey, my wife, came home. I was like, I know what you're supposed to do with your life. I was like, oh, great. Please tell me.
Please tell me.
She's like, you're supposed to be a life coach. I was like, oh, what? Again, got on Google. I was like, what is it?
Life coach.
You know, and it's like, I was like, life coach, you know, because, you know, we do a lot of like doTERRA essential oils, stuff like that. I was like, this is probably some kind of sham thing, which I think a lot of people, when they hear life coach, they're like, oh, gosh.
Here we go.
But, so I found a course in person, and so it was just like a very kind of general life coach one. I wanted to do it in person. I don't typically always learn well online. I'd rather be able to bounce questions off and that sort of thing. So part of the certification process was, you know, having to get a certain amount of hours. And so I just posted on Facebook, hey guys, this is what I'm doing. I'd love to do a session for you for free to help me with my certification. And I just blasted it out. And what I learned is, so a lot of people, they were like photographers that came to see me, small business owners, startups. And then some of it was just like very general, like people having like relationship problems, stuff like that. And I liked all of it. And so I think part of me, I don't like having to choose. This is a good thing and a bad thing. Like if I want to get certified to be a life coach, I don't want to have to build a business out of it. And that was part of the process. It was like, do I want to do this as a business, or is it just like, this skill set is awesome to have because generally like friends call me when they want to talk about serious stuff. I work through things.
Yeah.
So even if I never build a business around of it, out of it, then it's still a good thing to have. And so doing all these different projects, part of it is kind of discovering things about myself, what I enjoy doing, what makes sense as a business. And, you know, I don't feel like there's a lot of stuff I couldn't do. And I'm not trying to sound like a, what's a proper?
Okay, well, you want to sound like you're arrogant or
there you go.
Yeah.
But it's just like I kind of feel like I can learn how to do things. Well, I think pretty well. But.
Yeah, and I think part of that is because, as you said before, you aren't afraid to fail,
right?
And you've been in this game of starting, ending, maybe failing, misstarting, starting again, like you know the process so well at this point that it's like, I'm not afraid. There's things I'm afraid of, but I'm not afraid of that.
Right, right. And I think it's a double-edged sword because I'm not afraid to start things, but it's kind of like at some point, if I'm really going to transition out of like solely weddings or like not that I do solely weddings, but you know, if I really want to make a big shift, I'm really going to have to hit it hard. And so the ability to, and the belief that I can do anything kind of is makes it hard to be like, well, I'm just going to stick in this row and like only do this. But that's why photography worked out so well, is because I said, I'm choosing photography. I'm going all in. And, you know, that's how I built that career. And so it's kind of like, I don't know. It's a good and bad thing for me.
Sure.
But I think being aware of it, you know, what I've learned about myself is if I have too many things on the table, nothing's going to get done.
Yeah.
And so I have to be decisive about, you know, I have to do photography until like to provide for my family.
Mm-hmm.
But also if I want to build something else, I can only do that one other thing. I can't do like two or three other things.
Right.
It just gets lost in the mix.
Hmm. And so I guess even in the life coaching, you say you sit with all these different people, small business owners, photographers, just, you know, a person that's just doing a non-creative business owner kind of job.
Yeah.
Was there a common thread in the conversations you were having and where they were all leading and what people either needed to hear or...
So, yeah, let me talk about the life coach, the coaching process. That's something I like about it. It's really not dependent on me. So it's about 90%, 80, it's like kind of 80-20. So it's about 80% like me asking questions and listening, and then 20% kind of advice, but usually more like 10% for me, honestly. And so I think awareness is key. Like when you're in the middle of something in your life, it's hard to see all the pieces. But so basically what I do is ask the questions that kind of expose everything that's going on, and that being external factors, internal factors, having like sometimes people are having relationship issues they don't even acknowledge because they haven't said it out loud yet.
Yeah.
And so I think coaches, good coaches, are able to see all those pieces and how they're affecting each other. And then the next phase of that is like, okay, so like I'm here, but I want to be here. It's like, okay, what does it practically take to do that? And then we actually like lay out homework. So like, all right, on Tuesday at 4, you're going to call this person and apologize, or like you're going to reach out to these three people because, you know, they connected with you, but you never followed up, stuff like that. Or like you're going to exercise every day at 8 a.m., like whatever the goals are. And so what I have learned, though, is with all those free sessions, a lot of people, we'd have this amazing session, have the homework, and then I'd follow up and they would ghost me.
Really?
Right. And so I think it's hard to become aware and then see the work it's going to take, because at that point, it's like, do I really want this?
Right.
And some people did the work, and especially some of the photography coaching. One of my good friends, I'm not going to say her name, but I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
What we laid out, and now she's like crushing her photography game. And so it's just like, how much do you really want what you say you want? Because the proof is in the amount of work you're willing to put in oftentimes.
Yeah. And that's the biggest question of them all, I think, is how much do you want it?
Yeah.
How much do you really, really, really want it? Because I think, like you said, I love what you were saying, because in all honesty, you have the answers that you're seeking.
Exactly.
They're within you.
Yep.
You just need someone to ask you the right question, if you to say it out loud.
Right.
But you know who you need to forgive.
Right.
You know what you need to do next.
Right.
You know what you got to stop eating or whatever that is. Right.
Yeah.
You know, you just, you don't want to deal with the knowledge.
Everyone knows how to lose 10 pounds.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Exercise, you know, don't eat sugar
all
that stuff. Don't just take control of your diet and your health.
Don't eat or drink all the bread.
Yeah. And so, but it's just like having that accountability is like what can kind of get you over that hump. But a lot of us just don't really want to do it.
Wow. Interesting. any other things on like from the music photography angle that you wanted to speak on? Before we're about to land the plane here.
Okay. We're landing the plane. I don't know. Photography is really interesting right now because, you know, iPhones are getting way better and it's a super competitive market. There's just a ton of photographers out there. And so, I don't know. I'm curious to see how everything unfolds, because I think having that skill set of the actual business side is going to become more and more important, because like when I started 10 years ago, there was like nobody else really, like it wasn't a thing.
Right.
I felt very unique at the time. Now I feel like just another schmuck that's living in Nashville. Like,
you know, I shoot weddings.
Yeah. Everybody has a camera. Everybody has like a Sony A7 or something.
Yeah.
And are more famous on Instagram than I am using their iPhone. So, I think anything you do, just like as a creative, if you want to launch a business around it, I think really taking some time to learn, like if I could talk to my college self, which I didn't really understand the point of college. Like I was like, oh, I'm supposed to learn something, and then I use that for a job. I was just like, this is like the next phase for me. But I wish I had studied probably business or marketing instead.
Really?
I
mean,
I did oral communications, which isn't even a degree anymore.
Ooh.
But yeah,
let's go. I was PR and oral communications. It was great.
There we go. And which was good for the, you know, we learned a lot of presentation making, public speaking, which is, comes into handy. But
yeah,
if someone said, hey, I want to be a photographer, what should I do? I'd say like study marketing and business, because you can learn photography like easy, especially now with all the videos and stuff out there. Cameracamp.net.
Nice. Like the plug.
But yeah, so I mean, I think, and those business and marketing skills can translate into anything that you want to do. So if you decide you don't want to run a photography business anymore, you can start a donut shop with your five daughters.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and what I would even say, what I have noticed personally from your photography and other folks that I think are really good at what they do is, yes, there is the business side, where the marketing side, yes, there's, and now Instagram is a big part of that marketing side. Like, what are your posts and what are your images you're using and how you're putting that, those things out there for people to see.
Yeah.
Yes. I think there is the mechanics of how you use your camera and using your camera or iPhone well, because that's, there's a mechanical piece of that. Like you said, with your new business camera camp. But I think that there's that piece that is like, you're just, I don't know if I can train someone to have this photography eye, to be this creative presence that it just knows that's the shot.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
That's definitely a huge part of it.
And I feel like, and I don't know if you've even thought about like the percentage of that, like what's if those are the three kind of pieces of the puzzle, which is the higher percentage on making you this amazing, successful, great, whatever photographer, wedding, music, live action, whatever.
Honestly, I think it's a huge percentage is the business of marketing, because probably 75, because here's the deal. You can be doing amazing music, amazing artwork, anything. If no one knows you're doing it, it doesn't matter.
Ooh.
And so you have to know how to make relationships.
Okay.
Get people talking about you. Otherwise, you're just like I could probably make some money off at least one of the songs somehow that I wrote.
Yeah.
But it's just sitting in my, on my computer, you know? And so that doesn't change anything.
Yeah, because you're touching on something that is going to be very sensitive to some people, but it's true. Like, we could go tonight in this city, we're in Nashville, Tennessee, to any concert, and some people are crushing it who are legitimately talented people, bands, artists. And sometimes the thing that's standing in their way is that they have a marketing problem.
Mm.
They have a business problem.
Right.
And not, they don't have an art problem because they're great.
Yeah.
But then it's like I go back, because it's like part of it is too, like, but no, you're right, because the relationships, because it's all about getting seen by the right people in the right time, et cetera, et cetera. But that's all, that's relationships.
Yeah. I think like hone your craft, be extremely creative, and like, so when you, all that, the business and marketing relationships leads up to that, like you come through, you know. But I mean, there's some balance in there. I think if you are like overly talented, like there's a more natural way for people to find you, because they're like drawn to your stuff. But I've seen some very average photographers that are crushing it just because they're rocking the business side. So it's just like, there's push and pull.
Don't shade at anybody right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just like, I don't know. You can have it either way, I'd say. But I mean, it's always, the ideal situation is, like, you do have the eye, you are incredibly talented, but also you have the business stuff locked in.
Mm.
But I think there's push and pull, like, you can still do well, but if you really want to crush it, I feel like having both those in place is the place to be.
Okay, that's good. Anything else you want to cover? We haven't talked anything about, we need to land this plane, but...
I feel good.
Faith, spirituality, want to give a hot take, cold take on any of that?
Are we landing the plane? Because I feel like that's going to go different place.
Well, just give us a nugget. Give us a nugget. Just give us.
Yeah. A spiritual nugget.
A spiritual nugget.
Man,
I feel like it's because I feel like it's a big part of you. We didn't really touch a lot on it, and it's gonna be the last time we chat. But I mean, if you wanna, and maybe the way you frame, maybe the way we frame this for you is, what's been the thing that's been resonating with you when it comes to faith, spirituality? What's been the thing that's been drawing you, making you feel alive, connected, whatever?
I think just making time to be with God. It's, you know, it's weird because when some of like the times in the past I felt closer to God was just because I had all the time in the world. Like I was riding my bike to Fido and I'd come home and there's no one there, and I'd like write music and like read my Bible and like journal. And just as you get older, like, you know, I got two boys and a wife in our house, and like I love it, but like if I'm not intentional about making the time, it just doesn't happen. Yeah. I don't know. I also want to encourage people, if you feel like a tugging on your heart to do something specific, just lean into it. Because I feel like that always builds. Anytime that I've felt a gentle nudge and stepped into it, it kind of builds from there into larger things. Like the retreat we led, that was total, like, I literally like went away to a cabin in the woods and fasted and had no TV or Wi-Fi, internet, anything, and kind of felt, through reading the Bible, like this weird story in Malachi that I was supposed to start a retreat with Patrick that we had talked about before called Retreat and Refine.
And which we will do another one.
We'll see. Yeah.
The fall. Okay, okay. The fall. Coming soon.
Yeah. And it's just, I remember, so everybody kind of left and me and Travis were still kind of waiting and we were packing up. I was like, hey, do you mind if I go to the dock? So this is like after the retreat's done. I just remember standing there and just having this overwhelming presence of like, this is exactly where you're supposed to be right now in this moment. And I don't know like how God talks to us all the time, but that's how he spoke to me in that moment. It was just literally like an overwhelming presence of like, you listened, you heard me, and like, there is fruit from this.
Good. Good. Okay. Quick speed round. Give me three bands. Three bands that you love that have been influenced. That have influenced your life, your perspective, just any, like just three artists that kind of come to mind.
Patty Griffin.
Yes.
Aaron Wright.
Yes.
And here we go. Third Eye Blind.
Hey, they're playing in Nashville soon.
Oh man. Yeah. Best like first track to last track ever. I just don't get many albums like I don't, where it's just like, I will listen through this whole thing.
That's amazing.
So just threw that curveball in there, but.
If karaoke go to
Piano Man. So one time I first started dating my wife Lacey, and I stole this trip from a guy. I saw it someplace downtown, but so Piano Man queued up, which as you know has a big harmonica solo, mm-hmm. like mid song, and so I'm like singing the song. I got a decent voice. It's like I know the harmonica part is coming. So this is like flip phone days. So I have this silver flip phone that just happened to look like harmonica. So I pull it out of my pocket, hold it up the mic, they can't really see. And everyone in that bar thought I was playing the harmonica part. I was legend for an hour until I couldn't hold it anymore. I was just I'm not that good.
It's a flip phone.
Yeah, just a flip phone.
Oh, that's really good. Three books people should read.
I'm really bad about remembering book titles. I like anything by Brennan Manning, Ragamuffin Gospel, Abba's Child. I'm reading one about the Enneagram right now, which I think has been really helpful. The Finding Your Path or something like that. Do you know?
Finding Your Path?
Yeah.
You know who?
I don't know. Anyways, okay. A good one is The Obstacle is the Way. That's a really kind of short read, and I don't remember the author. Like I said, I'm really bad about remembering that stuff.
But that's fine.
It kind of talks about how obstacles often led people. It's like very real stories throughout history about how the obstacle actually led to the success. And so I highly recommend that, The Obstacle is the Way.
Yeah. Cool. I think that's all. I think we'll call it good.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Justin. We'll see y'all soon.